This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Padres Dodgers tonight here on 97.3 The Fan. You can catch the EcoWater SoCal pregame show just after 6 o'clock. Yoshinobu Yamamoto will make his second start for the Dodgers against the Padres. Of course, started that second game in Korea when the Padres knocked him out of the game after just one inning, scoring five runs against him. Padres went on to the 15-11 win over the Dodgers to split the Seoul series. Now, in that game, Joe Musgrove started, scuffled a bit, and Michael King came in the fourth. He will start tonight against the Dodgers. So he pitched 3 1/3 in that game, Woods. 4 hits, 3 earned runs, 3 walks, 5 strikeouts. Did get the win in relief.
Bit of a vulture.
Now, the numbers are not terrific in that start, but it was really just Mookie Betts who he hurt him for a 2-run homer. And then in the last inning, he walked Mookie and they took Michael King out. And I believe Matsui allowed the inherited run to score. Those accounted for the 3 runs that he allowed. So, you know, Mookie, obviously, who was the hottest player on the planet for the first 10 games of the season. He got his, but otherwise Michael King actually, I thought, pitched not badly against the Dodgers in that first effort in Korea. We'll see if any of that translates over tonight to the opening game of the series. Again, starts just after 7 o'clock, pregame show just after 6 o'clock here on 97.3 The Fan.
Yeah, I'm, like every series, you know, you cautiously optimistic, right? And you look at the pitching matchups and say, all right, yeah, Yamamoto has figured it out since, but Michael King looks like he's figured something out too. You know, their top six is nasty, dude. Just straight up. They're just the nasty, relentless, good ABs all the time. They're just a nasty-looking team. And if you can find a way to navigate or minimize Ben for 5-6 innings, and what's going to be really interesting, and we'll ask Mike Schilt about it tonight, he'll have a fresh bullpen ready to deploy. You know, how aggressive are you? How aggressive are you in these games against the Dodgers? How aggressive are you going to be on the base paths? And then you look at Saturday's matchup, and you go, okay, Matt Waldron, who looked really, really sharp, against Gavin Stone, who has really scuffled. Now, the Padres against guys that have really scuffled, other than maybe Kyle Hendricks, you know, they have a tough time against those guys too. So because it makes no sense, they'll probably light up Yamamoto and get shoved on by Gavin Stone. But listen, this is a gettable Dodgers team. They absolutely are. They're just, if you can get through that first six, you know, and minimize the damage early, Benny, you got as good a shot as anybody.
What you can't let happen in this series is you cannot let the bottom third of the Dodgers order
get hot.
Gavin Lux, Kike Hernandez, whoever's in there, you cannot let them start get going. Chris Taylor hitting 037. If those guys start doing some damage at the bottom of the order, there's only so much you can do against the top of their order. You know, the 4 chances for Betts, Otani, and Freeman.
Right. And then Max Muncy.
They're going to get something.
They're going to get
You're not going to shut them out 3 games. So they're going to get something. You cannot let the bottom third get hot.
How scared are you, though? And how conditioned are we when Chris Taylor steps to the plate? This is a 3-run homer. I mean, you just almost can, you can almost count on it. Max Muncy, he always eats against the Padres.
James Outman hit a home run in their last game, 3-run shot.
Yeah.
That's worrisome.
Gavin Lux. You know, it's just the matchup is not our favorite matchup, certainly. But I don't know too many people going into a series with the Dodgers, you know, saying, oh, well, yeah, I really like our matchups against these guys. They're a good team, straight up. 2 out of 3 would be a dream. Would be a dream. Now, if they sweep the Dodgers, I'll eat a handful of jelly beans from the gross. I'll eat a handful. 3 games.
Jelly bean roulette.
The jelly bean. I'll reach my hand and I don't even spin it. All of them together.
The whole thing.
Like a smorgasbord.
A sweep.
You know, I'll do 2 out of 3. We went 2 out of 3.
Really?
Yeah,
wow.
100%.
People
deserve
baseball.
It. People deserve it.
Dodgers aren't going to win every series all year long. They already lost one. They lost their series to the Cubs.
Yep.
just a few days ago.
That's exactly right.
Who won the Padres series?
And then the Padres beat the Cubs 2 out of 3. By that logic,
we're going to take 2 out of 3.
Padres are the favorites here. Dodgers really the underdogs going into this series.
Be the happiest handful of jelly beans your boy ever ate. At the end of the day, they're just jelly beans, so I'll suck them down.
I mean, they shouldn't harm you physically.
No.
They allow children to consume them.
Yeah, absolutely.
I do understand that point.
Yeah.
I need a contestant for Take on Woods. It's our Friday edition of our musical trivia game. Chance to qualify for the trip to Las Vegas. Call now, 833-288-0973. 833-288-0973. Play here in just a couple of minutes. Just wrapped up the first round of the Masters that was delayed a little bit by weather yesterday and then called early due to darkness. One of the players who was still on the course with 5 holes left yesterday was Tiger Woods. He did not get off to a good start today. He was 1 under through his first 13 holes yesterday, which was pretty darn good considering how little competitive golf he's played. But he bogeyed 14 and then he bogeyed 18 to finish at 1 over par, a 73 for Tiger Woods in the first round of the Masters. And he'll tee off in his second round very shortly, momentarily, as the second round is now well underway at Augusta National Golf Club. So I saw Jordan Spieth had a terrible finish. He had a quad on number 15. He's pretty much out of it. Doesn't even have a chance to make the cut. Some other guys struggling, but the leader after the first round is Bryson DeChambeau.
Shocking to me.
Woods coming off the LIV Tour and was just bombing the ball yesterday like he does. Put himself in good positions, made a few putts on the back nine, and just like that, had a 65, 7 under par, and a one-shot lead over the number one player in the world. I would think everybody there has got to be pretty nervous that Scotty Scheffler got off to a good start, because he just does not play bad golf. And the fact that he's at 6 under right now, he's going to be very hard to hold off this weekend. He was the favorite to begin with. I think he's now even more of a favorite. Even though he's not in the lead, he's even more of a favorite now going into the second round.
I'm going to need Mrs. Scheffler to go into labor. I've got Rory, and I need Mrs. Scheffler to have that baby.
That's right. She is close, and he has said if it happens, he's going to leave. Same with Sam Burns. I think he was 8 over, so no worries about Sam Burns leaving if his wife goes into labor. But going to be a tougher decision when you're right at the top of the leaderboard to leave the Masters early when you've got a chance to add a major title and a second green jacket, which is what Scotty Scheffler is going for. So that's a little quick update on the golf first major of the year going on at Augusta National. Rory McIlroy, 1 under first round. Actually, his best start at Augusta in the last 6 years. He has gotten off some bad starts that have really pretty much taken him out of contention in the last few tournaments, and then he kind of finished and, you know, moved up the leaderboard, but it was too late. So he's not out of it at 1 under. The cut line right now is at 2 over. So Tiger Woods trying to make his 24th consecutive cut and tie the all-time record with Fred Couples and Gary Player. He'll need to shoot probably no worse than, you know, even or 1 over at the most if he's going to make the cut. And remember, he's already played a few holes, and he's got to do all that walking on the hilly course. We'll see if he makes it through and can make the cut one more time here at Augusta National.
And so when we get out of here today, is that that's what you're doing?
Yeah, probably watching some Masters. You got to take my car in to get the, there's a coolant leak somewhere, I told you. So
fix it yourself.
I don't think I can fix that one myself. I could add coolant myself. I was able to do that myself. Proudly topped it off.
But if there's a leak.
But if there's like an actual part that's leaking, I'm not replacing a like radiator parts or coolant tanks.
My wife's Prius, the turn signal is gone out, one of them, so it's blinking really quickly, and I need to swap it out. So I went and bought the bulbs.
Yep.
Because I've done headlights before.
Sure.
But these, I was getting an oil change. They were like, oh, we'll do it for you. You have the bulbs? I'm like, yeah, I do. That would be great. They go, actually, you have to remove the front bumper to get in there.
Oh.
So we can't do that. We can't be liable.
Makes it harder for you to do it.
And I go, well, F me. What am I supposed to do? I was like looking around like, oh, you got to take these clips out and then you just pull the bumper off and then you can stick your hand in there and replace the bulb. I'm like, oh, kill me.
My wife would have a bumperless Prius if she let me get my hands on it.
Don't mess with it.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. My check engine light came on yesterday. I will also be going to the dealership today. Very cool. Very excited.
Car trouble Friday.
Sucks.
Please help us.
All right, let's see. We need a like a well, we got Valvoline. I love they're great.
Went in 2 days.
That's where I went for the oil change.
Yeah, the oil change is great, but I don't know if you've got more serious issues.
Yeah, I think I do.
They put new wipers on. Yeah, they changed the bulb that goes above your license plate was out, but they just said we cannot take off your bumper and do
and
that.
And they told
us.
Me they can't fix my coolant leak either.
So. Yeah, they'll get you an oil change and get you dialed in.
All right, let's play today's game. It is time for some Take on Woods.
It's time for Take on Woods.
Take on Woods. Woods.
Take on Woods brought to you by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. It only takes 15 minutes, and you don't have to get out of your car. For directions and discounts, go to SoCalOilChange.com. That's SoCalOilChange.com. David, you are up today on Take on Woods. Happy Friday to you. Welcome.
Good morning, fellas.
Good morning. All right, let's get you qualified for the trip to Las Vegas. Two nights at the Westgate. Tickets to Kool and the Gang. Multiple sold-out shows. You can get yours at Ticketmaster.com and check out the Westgate Las Vegas Resort and Casino. Their newly designed premier rooms, part of their $70 million in room renovations. All right, it is five questions. You v. Woods. Beat or tie him. We'll put you into the drawing for Vegas. Here are the categories. Back to school. Questions about songs featuring school subjects. We've got royal titles, five songs or artists that include a British royal in their name, a title. And our new category, J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. It's an all 2 second song category with Jets being key in every answer. So, David, which one would you like to play? Back to school, royal titles, or J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets?
Let's go with the Jets, Jets, Jets.
Oh, we're going musical today. All right, it's an all 2 second song edition of Take on Woods. You'll need to identify five songs and their artists, each to score the point, and each song title or artist includes the letters J-E-T in that order somewhere in the title or the name. Got it, David?
Wow, okay.
All right, so keep that in mind. Yeah. So J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. Paulie's going to play all the music. Remember, I need the title and the artist for each song to score the point. You ready to go?
Yeah, let's give it a shot.
60 seconds on the clock. Category J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. Your time begins when Paul plays the music of the first of our five songs. Good luck, David. Let's take on Woods. Correct.
Steve Miller, Airplane.
No, incorrect. Let's go to our next song.
Get on the Soul, Aqualung.
Correct.
That's what's her name again? Oh, gosh darn it.
What's the chick with the
I love... Okay, hold it.
Yep. And what's the title?
Black and Gold.
Yes, last one. You want to hear it again?
Yeah, please. Beastie Boys?
No, but you did get three correct.
I couldn't give you the Steve Miller.
Yeah, thing. It's Jet Airliner, not Airplane or Jet Airplane. It's Jet Airliner by Steve Miller Band. You did get Benny and the Jets by Elton John. You got Aqualung by Jethro Tull. There's the Jet in there. I Love Rock and Roll by Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. The last one is Are You Gonna Be My Girl by Jet is the name of that band. So three. And we'll bring Woods in and see how he does. Yep, you are up, Woodsy. David, stay on the line. We'll see if your score holds up. Woods doesn't get the category, but he does get to know that it's an all 2 second song edition of Take on Woods.
Okay.
So David's score's locked in. Resetting all the music and the clock. 60 seconds. Your time begins when Paul plays the music. Good luck, Woods. Let's take on David.
Benny and the Jets, Elton John.
Correct.
Jet Airliner, Steve Miller Band.
Correct.
It's Inagata DeVita by Iron Butterfly.
Incorrect.
Oh, crap. I Love Rock and Roll, Joan Jett and the Blackhearts.
Correct.
My girl.
Four out of five is a narrow 4-3 win.
What's that stupid
over
song?
Data.
On a park bench. What is it?
That is Aqualung by Jethro Tull. So J-E-T was in every single answer. Benny and the Jets, Jet Airliner, Jethro Tull, Joan Jett.
That would help me.
Jet. Yeah.
That would have helped me.
That still would have been the trickiest one because Jethro Tull doesn't really.
Yeah.
Jethro Tull.
Kind of reaching on that one.
It's like eat her.
I just said the letters J-E-T in that order.
Good.
You're
going
to find in all the answers. You do win it. David, thank you for playing. Not quite enough to beat Woods today. We will come back next week with another chance to qualify for the trip to Las Vegas.
Felt good to not only win, but to like. I've been playing so poorly. He told Paul, I go, I'm just ready to bang it. Let's get rid of it. You know how I get.
One of our favorite segments.
Just bang it.
Yeah.
Just forget it. Just come up with something different. I don't care. Just do a Ben. Let Ben just do sports trivia. I'm just ready to fall in line here.
Who won the 1987?
How many gold gloves did so-and-so have?
How long would you say we've been doing Take on Woods now? Close to three years?
Oh, God.
2 to 3.
Yeah.
3 years.
I'm fine to move on, but.
I was talking with Steve Smith at Channel 10 the other day. I could probably now, publish a book of music trivia.
Yeah,
I
have written probably good.
In the neighborhood of maybe 700 different Take on Woods, 5 question categories over the last 3 years.
Yeah.
That's a lot. That's a lot of music trivia that you've done. And you've done very well over the last 3 years.
Good winning
and
percentage.
I still think it's a fun game.
I do too. I love the 2 second song.
It's a little more work to put those together. Paulie does a really nice job on those.
It's really good.
But that one, and you got to find 5 songs that are recognizable.
You're doing great.
That was a good one. All right, let's take a time out. We'll come back. Don't Do This is next. And it has only taken.
two weeks.
For the New York Yankees.
You gotta swing the bat!
Media.
You gotta swing the bat!
To echo some things that we heard during Juan Soto's time.
Top New York media bit.
Here in San Diego.
It's gonna be the death of me. Man, you guys gotta be more like the New York media. They're so intelligent. It makes me want to run. Jump through that glass right there.
That's coming up next after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Don't do this.
It's time for Don't Do This.
What were you thinking?
3 stories from the world of sports that make us all shake our heads.
Why?
How many times do I have to tell you?
I'm sorry, I fudged up, guys.
You idiot. You moron.
You're a dumbass.
The apple sometimes does far fall from the tree.
Don't do this.
Do not tweet that.
With Ben and Woods.
I like a Nickelback song or two.
On 97.3 The Fan.
Don't forget, we got guests coming up. Kevin Charity, Matt Friars, talking Padres minor leagues at the bottom of the hour. We've got Jake and Jordan from Cespedes Family Barbecue at 8 o'clock. And manager Mike Schilt, the manager's report on a Friar Friday, coming up at 9. Right now, though, it is Don't Do This, and let's jump right into it. Woodsy, you get us started.
Man, tough New York media already on Juan Soto's case. They were down 4-2, I believe. To the Marlins in the 9th inning, and runners on 1st and 2nd. Juan Soto at the dish, Aaron Judge on deck. Juan Soto takes a walk on 4 wide pitches, as he will do a bunch of times. Does not expand his zone. Listen to it, this guy, our colleague. He's one of our colleagues, isn't he? He's an Odyssey guy from New York. Sal
Licata.
Took everything looking. Yeah. We'll get into that in a second.
So wait, well, let's get into it now.
Hold okay, on,
Rich,
and thank you for the call, Rich. Wait,
get into what?
He's looking for a walk. Soto's looking for, and I love Juan Soto.
Yeah.
And John Harper, my colleague at SNY, correctly predicted I would at some point go nuts about Soto looking for a walk. A walk is not as good as a hit. And when you have Judge struggling and you got the pitcher on the ropes, you got first and second in a spot right there where you need to do damage. Mm-hmm. You're Juan Soto. You need to do damage, not draw a walk. And Juan Soto's looking for a walk. Swing the bat, bro. That's you want to get paid, swing the bat. I don't care if he's a Yankee, if he's a Met. I cannot accept a walk in that spot from Juan Soto. That does not get the job done. Passing the baton is not what I'm looking for from Juan Soto. I'm looking for him to do some damage. Now, if you don't get plenty of pitches to hit, fine. Soto was looking for a walk in that at bat. So much so that when he walked, it was like he accomplished some great feat.
He did.
Oh, here we go, baby. I'm pumped up by walk. No. No, you didn't get the job done. You passed the baton to Judge, who's been cold, and he didn't get the job done. Soto failed. A walk in that spot was a fail for Juan Soto.
The way I look at when somebody says they're looking for a walk, to me, that implies they're afraid to swing the bat.
No.
Guys, we'll make sure you're not saying that. Please don't start saying that.
I don't think he was afraid.
You're not saying that. Tell me.
He walked.
I understand that. Sometimes not every pitch is a strike.
I want him to do damage. I think Juan Soto approached that at bat like he does every other.
What?
And that's looking to have a quality at bat.
Meaning staying in his process? That's why he's Juan Soto. Yeah, yeah.
Took 2 weeks. Now, the best part about all
the
of
the co-host there
is, yeah,
makes some good points.
Now, here's the best part. So later on in the day, he goes on a panel. Mitzi never even watched a game.
Sal Licata.
Didn't even see the pitches. You stupid. Like, you set baseball back with takes like that. You set it back. It is the cry of the casual. I didn't watch the game. All I saw is BB in the box score, and I'm going to go on and give a rant. I didn't even see the pitches. I didn't watch the game. It's the cry of the casual. And again,
remember in 2001 when Barry Bonds just kept going up there looking for walks.
Right. Again, like, you don't slug what he slugs by looking for walks. You don't hit 35 home runs by looking for walks in Petco Park, you know, no less. And I don't know. I mean,
and I know there were some Padres fans on Sal's side of this debate when Juan Soto was a member of the Padres.
How could you?
And there were at-bats where he took pitches that were hittable and strikes and ended up walking later in that at-bat.
Sure.
It frustrated some people. But ultimately, the pitcher's job. It's hard to get Juan Soto out. And it's hard to get any major league batter out. And the best way to do that is to get them to swing
pitches outside the zone.
At a bad pitch. That's your best chance to get a guy out.
I just retweeted a guy framed them all and circled where the pitches were. Again, you're talking about four out of the zone. That isn't passing the baton to Aaron Judge is a good baseball play, is it not? I mean, yes, if there's a strike in the zone, you try to hammer it, certainly. And he's hitting well for them.
It's tough to find a scenario in which loading the bases for Aaron Judge is a bad thing,
you know?
Something to get upset about.
It just, that's the thing. And then if you didn't even watch the game, you sound like a buffoon. You don't even know what you're talking about, you know? And that, it's that kind of stuff that really sets our favorite game back. I make wrong takes all the time, but I at least try to make informed takes. Like, I saw this. Maybe I didn't agree with it. Maybe it's a bad take. I don't care. I'm sure it happens all the time. But to get on your radio show in New York City, by the way, you can't walk. Swing the bat. If he hits a down and away pitch and rolls over into a ground ball, what is he saying? You can't swing at that pitch. You got to get Judge up there with the bases loaded.
Exactly.
Absolute buffoonery. Out of our colleague Sal Licata. It said, dude, and then you read the replies. It's, this is why sports radio sucks. This is why sports radio sucks. This is why sports radio sucks.
A walk is not as good as a hit.
Stupid, man.
It's actually the same in many circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, there's a runner in scoring. A knock there would have been great. You would have cut it to 4-3.
Maybe.
Judge comes up, they walk him.
I mean, if you hit, you know, Soto hits the ball really hard in a small field like that. A hard liner to the right fielder that's a one-hopper single is a walk, essentially, also.
Except only one pitch, maybe, instead of four pitches.
Oh, no. It just sets us back so much. We're giving him the attention that he craves. Guy that he works with, who I love, Keith McPherson's his name. He's fantastic. Keith is Sal, S-A-L, screams something loudly. That's what his name, like, he just, that's what he does. He screams his point, It doesn't make sense. He didn't watch the game. It's just absurd. And he's a Met fan, by the way.
Screams absurdity.
Screams absurdity loudly. Something like that. Yeah. So, so good.
All right. We'll just do kind of a combination of don't and do this.
D-D mega doo-doo.
Our second story. Because bad agenting may have finally cost Scott Boras, you know, the super agent who always gets his clients the most, did not this offseason, and it seems to have cost him at least one client, according to sources. Jordan Montgomery, who was signed by the Arizona Diamondbacks in late March after failing to, you know, get the year contract that he was looking for, the nine figures over $100 million contract that he was expected by most people to get after leading the Texas Rangers to the World Series. Signed a one-year $25 million deal with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Sounds like Jordan Montgomery wasn't too happy with how it all played out, because within the first 2 weeks of the season, he has reportedly fired Scott Boras as his agent and signed with the Wasserman agencies, Joel Wolf and Nick Chanock, as his new agents. No statements, nothing official, yeah. And I don't know if Jordan will comment or not on that, but this is one of those pretty obvious situations where you had a client, and I can only imagine that they had a game plan going into the offseason, and it did not go the way that Scott Boras planned it out for Jordan Montgomery, because you don't fire your agent a couple of weeks after signing a deal if you thought that things went really, really well in free agency for you.
I just pictured Scott Boras yesterday, and like Juan Soto is his, he's going into a walk year this year. Juan Soto with a Cushman hat on playing the guitar. Like, I just pictured him from Jerry Maguire. Yeah, Cush Slash. This is Cush. I just, like, Cush saves all. Soto saves all for Scott Boras. He's got, I mean, he had a rough
offseason.
The
Boras four of Matt Chapman, Cody Bellinger, Blake Snell, and Jordan Montgomery, none of them got what they were projected, like the media projections. And I get those are guesstimates, and, you know, but oftentimes the media comes in way under. Like Jung Ho Lee's estimate for the media, he got way more than people thought he was going to get. Yoshinobu Yamamoto got way more. Shohei Ohtani got way more than people thought he was going to get. But all of Boras's clients, they got way less than everybody thought they were going to get.
Yo, is Boras there? Just sniff if he is. So good, man. So, so good. Yeah, we'll see what happens to Boras Corp. But yeah, that's a tough offseason for those guys. And he's, you know, finally time to pay the piper for
that.
Good
for Jordan, though, to, like, I mean, that can't be an easy thing to step up and do. You know you're going to get some attention for it. So that's don't and do this for a Friday.
That was Don't Do This with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
Don't Do This brought to you by the Kraft Taco in Sereno Valley. The Kraft Taco has some of the best quality tacos in all of San Diego. Go to thekrafttaco.com. Take a look at their happy hour specials today. Thekrafttaco.com. I may go to the Kraft Taco later today. Shelly and I were thinking we need to do a happy hour somewhere on a Friday. Maybe the Kraft Taco is the place to be
tonight.
It's a
good spot to go.
See how it works out the rest of my Friday. All right, when we come back, Kevin Charity, our friend from Mad Friars. How are Padres doing in the minor leagues? The early start to the AAA, AA, single A season for the San Diego Padres prospects. We'll get an update coming up next on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. So the Padres have only made one move so far this season, correct? From the minor leagues, calling up Brett Sullivan.
Yeah.
From AAA and sending Graham Pauly back down to AAA, where I believe yesterday he had two home runs for the El Paso Chihuahuas. Now, the offensive numbers we've said before in AAA are not necessarily comparable to what you're going to do in the major leagues, and you have to take those with a grain of salt. But I approved of that move, Woods, because I thought Graham Pauly needs to be getting at-bats, not sitting on the bench with the San Diego Padres. So he'll be getting those at-bats right now. But we wanted to take a little deeper look at the Padres minor league system as we get started here in the 2024 season. We're going to check traffic when we come back. Kevin Charity from Mad Friars is going to join us with a kind of a level-by-level breakdown of what the Padres have set up here for 2024. So that's coming up next year on 97.3 The Fan. MadFriars.com does an excellent job of covering each level of the Padres minor league system, the top prospects, the top 30 list every single year. And Kevin Charity has for many years been our kind of our go-to correspondent from MadFriars.com when we want to talk Padres in the minor leagues. He joins us right now here on Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan. Kevin, good morning. Happy baseball season to you.
Yeah, same to you guys. Glad to be on.
Good to have you, man. Where'd you want to start, Benjamin?
Let's start. Well, let's go down from the top because we just mentioned Graham Pauly back at AAA. But AAA has turned into, it used to be the last stop before you get to the big leagues. And Kevin, that's not necessarily the case anymore, especially when you look at the El Paso roster. There are some guys that we've seen in the big leagues before who, you know, could be called up again. But when you're looking for top prospects, El Paso's actually not the place you're going to look for them.
Yeah, the El Paso roster is kind of a collection of players that have had some big league experience, like Oscar Mercado, Mason McCoy, that type of thing. Position player-wise, the only two players, well, now with Pauly down there, he's really the only guy I would consider a top prospect. You're not going to get a lot of... if you're looking for the top talent in the system, it's definitely not in AAA. It's become kind of, I don't think it's on purpose. I think it's just a byproduct of where the guys they have in their system are at. But it's just kind of this kind of collective hodgepodge of 4A players, guys that, have had chances before. But it's definitely, I would say, for looking at the rosters, it's the least compelling version, but obviously it's going to get attention because it's the closest level to the big leagues for sure.
And there's a couple of guys there. One that you had in your top 20 list, Randy Vasquez, came over in the Juan Soto deal. How has he been looking? Tough place to pitch, but how's he been looking? And do you foresee him making a jump here anytime soon?
Well, the thing, again, when you look at El Paso is I've learned one of the things I look at over like ERA and hits is like kind of walk to strikeout ratio. And so when you look at Vasquez and his first two starts in that regard, he's only walked one batter in like seven or eight innings. Last year in the Yankees in AAA, he averaged about 4.5 walks per nine innings. So based on that, you've seen some improvement. Now, when you look at the ERA, it's over eight. He's given up 13 hits in 7.1 innings. But, he gave up a home run that wouldn't even be classified as a hard hit ball because the exit velocity on it was like 90 miles an hour. So you have to take that with a grain of salt, but based on, he's got a great curveball, 94 mile an hour fastball. He's been consistent with his velocity. So yeah, when you look at the numbers and you look at the box score, it doesn't look pretty, but you can definitely see, like, to me, looking at parts of both of his starts, he's pitched pretty well. And I think, logically looking at kind of how their 40-man roster is, and he's obviously being stretched out. He started the Korea series in the bullpen. He threw four innings his last start, so he should be someone that if they need a starter and they need to go to the minors to get it, I would imagine he would be probably at or near the top of the list.
You know, it's funny because when we did our roundtable yesterday, Tony Gwynn Jr., we were talking about maybe who potentially could come up. And, I thought, well, Jeremiah Estrada, I think, has been throwing pretty well. And Tony Gwynn Jr. said, look, when you call somebody up, the number one most important thing for those guys is to be able to find the zone. Coming in and walking guys is going to kill you. And that's actually encouraging for Randy Vasquez. Is that, in your opinion, is that something they probably look at the most, like hard hit balls and walks per nine?
I would imagine so, because, a perfect example last year is Pedro Avila, who I believe he had an ERA of like 8.5 in El Paso last year and pitched really well down the stretch. Now, the difference between him and, say, Vasquez is Avila did struggle with control last year, and I don't know if that's a byproduct of the environment of trying to stay out of the zone because the PCL is just really unforgiving. And so I think, yeah, for a guy like that struggled with command, that was kind of the thing that was going to keep him from starting, and that was like the question mark, can he throw enough strikes to be a mid-rotation starter, at least out of the gate the first two starts? He's accomplished that. And so, yeah, I'm not exactly sure what criteria they use. That's a really good question for, their development guides and something we definitely should ask them again just to get hopefully a definitive answer on that. But, yeah, I think you have to look at beyond ERA because there's guys that have ERAs of 5 and 6 in El Paso and then have come up to the big leagues and have pitched pretty well.
One more thing on El Paso quickly. I did see that after missing all or at least most of spring training, Jay Groom is back, and I get into my head, say the same thing. Stop trying to make Jay Groom happen.
It's your not going to happen with Jay Groom.
But there have been players who you give up on, and all of a sudden they figure it out in the minor leagues. Is there any sign that Jay Groom, who they got in the Eric Hosmer trade with the with the Red Sox, could ever be a pitcher on the big league level, like coming up still?
Yeah, I think, you know, the fact that he's on the 40-man roster gives him an advantage over a lot of guys. You know, he still had pretty abbreviated outings. Yeah, I think he's thrown a couple innings each time out. His velocity hasn't been amazing, but his command's been a lot better. The issue with him last year is he just was all over the place. His stuff wasn't as sharp as it was. He pitched really well when he came over from Boston in 2022, and last year was really just a horrible year for him. So there's some signs. Like, he's pitched a lot better this year in the limited outings. I think as he gets stretched out more here in the next couple of outings, he'll still be a guy to watch. You know, his velocity's been like low 90s. When he's been at his best, he's been kind of that 94, 95 range. So that'll be something to watch as he gets stretched out, as he gets kind of shakes off the rust. Because, like you said, like, he had injuries in the spring. But he hasn't done anything this year to really get further off the radar. I just would like to see him get stretched out and get a little bit more consistency in the zone. And I think, just again, because he's on the 40-man roster, he's got a shot.
Talking to our pal Kevin Charity from Mad Friars, the AA San Antonio Missions stock, you know, chock full of talent down there. A lot of people think, look, if there are call-ups to be made this year, there's some names. Robbie Snelling being one of them. He's only 20 years old, went up, what, 3 levels last year. Is he a guy that you expect is going to make that jump this year? And then, you know, you've got Adam Mazur threw really well, I think, last night. And then you've got some sticks down there as well, like Jacob Marcy and Martorella. So is that where the Padres are probably going to be looking to pull from this year?
If I was a betting man, I would say yes, because like in AAA, it really just depends on what you want. Do you want a guy like Oscar Mercado, who's in AAA, who's got big league experience, has had success, but he hasn't really had success recently? Is kind of that like quintessential 4A type player. At least that's what he's been the past few years. But I think if you're going to like what they've actually invested in their farm system, I think AA is where it's going to be at. And a guy like Snelling, his best case scenario last year, I thought was getting to Fort Wayne by the end of the year, and he surpassed that. And it wasn't just because they were rushing him. It's just because he was way too good for Lake Elsinore. Pretty much the same in Fort Wayne. And AA, at least his first start, he kind of struggled with his command a little bit. He walked 3 in like 4 innings. So his command in AA, since he's been pitching that level last year and just the beginning of part of this year, hasn't been as sharp. But the thing that about him is he's still just 20 years old. He'll get better. He'll figure things out. He's got that kind of bulldog mentality that you want. He's really in. I think he's someone that can help him out. But like, you know, like what you said, Adam Mazur has been probably the season's only a week old. He's only started 2 games, but like last night, I mean, he had 9 ground outs. You know, he's a guy that has 3 pretty good pitches, his curveball, his changeup, his fastball. He's missing bats this year, but the thing with him is he averaged less than 2 walks per 9 innings last year, and he's walked 1 guy in, I believe, 11 innings this year. So he fills up the zone, and his strikeout ratio, at least out of the gate, has improved. And I think if I'm looking at like AA, that is where I'm starting. If I had to bring up a pitcher from AA, it'd probably be him. And then Martorella is another guy that really, assuming when Manny gets healthy and can play third, he's a guy from the farm system that fits the roster perfectly. He's a left-handed first baseman DH type. But the thing that's impressive with him is, in addition to the power that he has, he's only struck out 3 times in about 35 plate appearances to start the season. So he's making consistent contact. He's hitting for power, and he's 23. So he's not necessarily like a 19-year-old they drafted in high school. He's a college bat. He looked really sharp out of the gate. So he's someone that has been really encouraging to watch.
Just quickly, Kevin, do you think that the fact that Jackson Merrill has looked so comfortable in center field already, does that change the prospect track for Jacob Marcy at all, who was kind of the center field guy, was getting a strong look in spring training, sent back down? You know, is he still coming up as center fielder, or is he now kind of blocked there and is going to have to look at the corners of the outfield?
It's a great question, because I don't know what the composition of the roster will look like in the future, because obviously Kim's a free agent next year. And is there a situation where they kind of move Merrill back into short? But he's played really well. He surpassed my expectations. I mean, I thought he'd hold his own offensively, but my concern is you're putting a guy into a big league center field who's never really played there before, at least in game action, and he's been impressive. I would think, you know, assuming you look at Merrill's stats over a full year, and if he has a great season and is an above average center fielder, making league minimum, I don't know why you'd mess with that. So I think for Marcy, I think he maybe can slide over to the left. I think his bat, he's not going to have a big power bat. He's going to be more of a speed contact guy. And he struggled out of the gate to start the year, but you know, we're 6 games into it, it's nothing to really be concerned about. But yeah, I would imagine, you know, my thought process would be if you leave Merrill in center field, yeah, you can make him in left and give him a full season of at bats. Even maybe he's next year is more of like a fourth outfielder type. They can, you know, give him positional flexibility. He hits left-handed, so I think there's a lot of options with him.
Last one for me, KC. Just wanted to Kevin Charity from Mad Friars joining us this morning. Ethan Salas, can't do an update without talking about Ethan Salas down in what? He's in low A right now?
High A.
He's in high A
but
right now.
He was
now.
A double A last
he was
year.
A double A, finished the year there. What are we hearing about him? I've seen a couple highlights, you know, ripping singles, stealing bags and stuff. So that's pretty cool. But what do you think their plans are with him?
Yeah, I think, first of all, I think sending him to high A was the right move after last year. It's kind of a weird thing because it felt like they were easing him into professional baseball, and then they just kind of, you know, put the foot to the floor and just really rush him up to double A, in my opinion. So I think out of the gate in high A, you know, he's hit safely, I believe, in the first 3 or 4 games. Fort Wayne's having some weather issues, so they've only played 1 game this week. But he played really well in their opening series on the road. Hit, you know, he got a couple of big hits, got a big knock in the 9th inning, dumped a single in the left field. But for him, yeah, I think it'll be an interesting challenge for him because the weather in the Midwest League at this time of the year is not, it can be kind of all over the place. So I think having to kind of maybe battle something he hasn't done before is a really good challenge. But out of the gate, he swung the bat really well. And I think just letting him get those everyday at bats at catcher, really play, you know, even at 17, he's still insanely young for the Midwest League. So I think they've done a really good job of kind of letting him get into that role. And I expect that he'll put up really solid offensive numbers there. You know, he's improving his catching behind the plate. So he's looked really solid out of the gate.
And then just quickly, I know they made the switch a couple of years ago where Lake Elsinore is now the low single A. Makes it a little harder to identify the prospects there, and it's the team that's closest to us here, obviously, but is there anything other? I know Dylan Head's there. Is there anything else to be looking for?
He's the guy. If you look at our top 20 list, he's the only person on the top 20 who made the list. We expect DeVries to be up there at some point. We kind of heard rumblings that he might have cracked the opening day roster, but he obviously didn't. Yeah, Dylan Head's a guy that was in high school last year, and so I think you have to kind of back off the numbers a little bit with him just because he is really, really young. But he plays an incredible defensive center field. I love guys like him that have that just premium athleticism that can just roam the center field. Playing defense in Lake Elsinore is really tough because they have the left center there is huge. So he's been running ball. He ran a ball down last week and looked really good there. Outside of him, you know, you have like, you know, Jay Beshears that they drafted last year out of Duke, second year in a row that they drafted a Duke infielder, obviously Paulie being the one before that. And he's swung the bat really well. And Romeo Sanabria, who's a first baseman, DH type guy, swung the bat really well, kind of a late round pick they had a few years ago. Outside of that, I mean, it's a hodgepodge of some college guys and some undrafted guys. But if you're going to a game up there, those are probably the three guys you'd want to watch.
Kevin, really appreciate early season update. Padres in the minor leagues from MadFriars.com. Kevin Charity, appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Yeah, interesting stuff there, especially when you think about it. I mean, I know you can't just say Jackson Merrill is now your center fielder of the future forever and ever. They could move him back to the infield at any point. But if you feel comfortable with him out there, it also makes, and I saw this point in the chat, guys like Jacob Marcy, Dylan Head, Homer Bush, if you needed to trade for someone, sure, all of a sudden you now have more depth in the outfield than you thought you had based on how Jackson Merrill has adjusted to the outfield.
I'm definitely down to stop moving guys every year. I think that would be probably a good...
Positionally,
yeah.
All right, more baseball talk on the way with our Friday conversation with our friends from Cespedes Family Barbecue. That'll kick off the second half of Men and Woods next year on 97.3 The Fan. So the Padres have only made one move so far this season, correct? From the minor leagues, calling up Brett Sullivan,
yeah,
from AAA and sending Graham Pauly back down to AAA, where I believe yesterday he had two home runs for the El Paso Chihuahuas. Now, the offensive numbers we've said before in AAA are not necessarily comparable to what you're going to do in the major leagues, and you have to take those with a grain of salt. But I approved of that move, Woods, because I thought Graham Pauly needs to be getting at-bats, not sitting on the bench with the San Diego Padres. So he'll be getting those at-bats right now. But we wanted to take a little deeper look at the Padres minor league system as we get started here in the 2024 season. We're going to check traffic when we come back. Kevin Charity from Mad Friars is going to join us with a kind of a level-by-level breakdown of what the Padres have set up here for 2024. So that's coming up next year on 97.3 The Fan. MadFriars.com does an excellent job of covering each level of the Padres minor league system, the top prospects, the top 30 list every single year. And Kevin Charity has for many years been our kind of our go-to correspondent from MadFriars.com when we want to talk Padres in the minor leagues. He joins us right now here on Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan. Kevin, good morning. Happy baseball season to you.
Yeah, same to you guys. Glad to be on.
Good to have you, man. Where do you want to start, Benjamin?
Let's start. Well, let's go down from the top because we just mentioned Graham Pauly back at AAA. But AAA has turned into it used to be the last stop before you get to the big leagues. And Kevin, that's not necessarily the case anymore, especially when you look at the El Paso roster. There are some guys that we've seen in the big leagues before who, you know, could be called up again, but when you're looking for top prospects, El Paso is actually not the place you're going to look for them.
Yeah, the El Paso roster is kind of a collection of players that have had some big league experience, like Oscar Mercado, Mason McCoy, that type of thing. Position player-wise, the only two players, well, now with Pauly down there, he's really the only guy I would consider a top prospect. You're not going to get a lot of if you're looking for the top talent in the system, it's definitely not in AAA. It's become kind of, I mean, I don't think it's on purpose. I think it's just a byproduct of where the guys they have in their system are at. But it's just kind of this kind of collective hodgepodge of 4A players, guys that, you know, have had chances before. But it's definitely, I would say, for looking at the rosters, it's the least compelling version. But obviously, it's going to get attention because it's the closest level to the big leagues for sure.
And there's a couple of guys there. One that you had in your top 20 list, Randy Vasquez, came over in the Juan Soto deal. How has he been looking? Tough place to pitch, but how's he been looking? And do you foresee him making a jump here anytime soon?
Well, the thing, again, when you look at El Paso is I've learned one of the things I look at over like ERA and hits is like kind of walk to strikeout ratio. And so when you look at Vasquez and his first two starts in that regard, he's only walked one batter in like seven or eight innings. Last year in the Yankees in AAA, he averaged about 4.5 walks per nine innings. So based on that, you've seen some improvement. Now, when you look at the ERA, it's over eight. He's given up 13 hits in 7.1 innings. But, you know, like he gave up a home run that wouldn't even be classified as a hard hit ball because the exit velocity on it was like 90 miles an hour. So It's you have to take that with a grain of salt, but based on, you know, he's got a great curveball, 94 mile an hour fastball. He's been consistent with velocity. So yeah, when you look at the numbers and you look at the box score, it doesn't look pretty, but you can definitely see, like, to me, like, looking at parts of both of his starts, he's pitched pretty well. And I think logically looking at kind of how their 40 man roster is, and, you know, he's obviously being stretched out. He started the Korea series in the bullpen. He threw four innings his last start. So he should be someone that if they need a starter and they need to go to the minors to get it, I would imagine he would be probably at or near the top of the list.
You know, it's funny because when we did our roundtable yesterday, Tony Gwynn Jr., we were talking about maybe who potentially could come up. And, you know, I thought, well, Jeremiah Estrada, I think, has been throwing pretty well. And Tony Gwynn Jr. said, look, I mean, when you call somebody up, the number one most important thing for those guys is to be able to find the zone. Coming in and walking guys is going to kill you. And that's actually encouraging for Randy Vasquez. Is that, in your opinion, is that something they probably look at the most? Like hard hit balls and walks per nine?
I would imagine so because, I mean, a perfect example last year is Pedro Avila, who I believe he had an ERA of like 8.5 in El Paso last year and pitched really well down the stretch. Now, the difference between him and, say, Vasquez is Avila did struggle with control last year, and I don't know if that's a byproduct of the environment of trying to stay out of the zone because the PCL is just really unforgiving. And so I think, yeah, for a guy like that, that struggled with command, that was kind of the thing that was going to keep him from starting. And that was like the question mark. Can he throw enough strikes to be a mid-rotation starter, at least out of the gate, the first two starts? He's accomplished that. And so, yeah, I'm not exactly sure what criteria they use. I mean, that's a really good question for like their development guys, and something we, you know, we definitely should ask them again just to get a hopefully a definitive answer on that. But yeah, I think you have to look at beyond ERA, because there's guys that have ERAs of 5 and 6 in El Paso and then have come up to the big leagues and have pitched pretty well.
One more thing on El Paso quickly. I did see that after missing all or at least most of spring training, Jay Groom is back, and I get into my head, say the same thing. Stop trying to make Jay Groom happen. It's
your
not going to happen
with Jay Groom.
But there have been players who you give up on, and all of a sudden they figure it out in the minor leagues. Is there any sign that Jay Groom, who they got in the Eric Hosmer trade with the with the Red Sox, could ever be a pitcher on the big league level, like coming up still?
Yeah, I think, you know, the fact that he's on the 40-man roster, he gives him an advantage over a lot of guys. You know, he's still had pretty abbreviated outings. I think he's thrown a couple innings each time out. His velocity hasn't been amazing, but his command's been a lot better. The issue with him last year is he just was all over the place. His stuff wasn't as sharp as it was. He pitched really well when he came over from Boston in 2022, and last year was really just a horrible year for him. So there's some signs. Like he's pitched a lot better this year in the limited outings. I think as he gets stretched out more here in the next couple of outings, he'll still be a guy to watch. You know, his velocity has been like low 90s. When he's been at his best, he's been kind of that 94, 95 range. So that'll be something to watch as he gets stretched out, as he gets kind of shakes off the rust. Cause like you said, like he had injuries in the spring, but he hasn't done anything this year to really get further off the radar. I just would like to see him get stretched out and get a little bit more consistency in the zone. And I think, just again, because he's on the 40-man roster, he's got a shot.
Talking to our pal Kevin Charity from Mad Friars, the AA San Antonio Missions stock, you know, chock full of talent down there. A lot of people think, look, if there are call-ups to be made this year, there's some names. Robbie Snelling being one of them. He's only 20 years old, went up, what, 3 levels last year. Is he a guy that you expect is going to make that jump this year? And then, you know, you've got Adam Mazur threw really well, I think, last night. And then you've got some sticks down there as well, like Jacob Marcy and Martorella. So is that where the Padres are probably going to be looking to pull from this year?
If I was a betting man, I would say yes, because like in AAA, it really just depends on what you want. Do you want a guy like Oscar Mercado, who's in AAA, who's got big league experience, has had success, but he hasn't really had success recently? Is kind of that like quintessential 4A type player. At least that's what he's been the past few years. But I think if you're going to like what they've actually invested in their farm system, I think AA is where it's going to be at. And a guy like Snelling, his best case scenario last year, I thought was getting to Fort Wayne by the end of the year, and he surpassed that. And it wasn't just because they're rushing him. It's just because he was way too good for Lake Elsinore. Pretty much the same in Fort Wayne. And AA, at least his first start, he kind of struggled with his command a little bit. He walked 3 in like 4 innings. So his command in AA, since he's been pitching that level last year and just the beginning part of this year, hasn't been as sharp. But the thing that about him is he's still just 20 years old. He'll get better. He'll figure things out. He's got that kind of bulldog mentality that you want. He's really I think he's someone that can help him out. But like, you know, like what you said, Adam Mazur has been probably the season's only a week old. He's only started 2 games, but like last night, I mean, he had 9 ground outs. You know, he's a guy that has 3 pretty good pitches, his curveball, his changeup, his fastball. He's missing bats this year, but the thing with him is he averaged less than 2 walks per 9 innings last year, and he's walked 1 guy in, I believe, 11 innings this year. So he fills up the zone, and his strikeout ratio, at least out of the gate, has improved. And I think if I'm looking at like AA, that is where I'm starting. If I had to bring up a pitcher from AA, it'd probably be him. And then Martorella is another guy that really, assuming when Manny gets healthy and can play third, he's a guy from the farm system that fits the roster perfectly. He's a left-handed first baseman, DH type. But the thing that's impressive with him is, in addition to the power that he has, He's only struck out three times in about 35 plate appearances to start the season. So he's making consistent contact. He's hitting for power. And he's 23, so he's not necessarily like a 19-year-old that they drafted in high school. He's a college bat. He looked really sharp out of the gate. So he's someone that has been really encouraging to watch.
Just quickly, Kevin, do you think that the fact that Jackson Merrill has looked so comfortable in center field already, does that change the prospect track for Jacob Marcy at all, who was kind of the center field guy, was getting a strong look in spring training, sent back down? You know, is he still coming up as center fielder, or is he now kind of blocked there and is going to have to look at the corners of the outfield?
It's a great question, because I don't know what the composition of the roster will look like in the future, because obviously Kim's a free agent next year. And is there a situation where they kind of move Merrill back into short? But he's played really well. He surpassed my expectations. I mean, I thought he'd hold his own offensively, but my concern is you're putting a guy into a big league center field who's never really played there before, at least in game action, and he's been impressive. I would think, you know, assuming you look at Merrill's stats over a full year, and if he has a great season and is an above average center fielder, making league minimum, I don't know why you'd mess with that. So I think for Marcy, I think he maybe can slide over to the left. I think his bat, he's not going to have a big power bat. He's going to be more of a speed contact guy. And he struggled out of the gate to start the year, but you know, we're six games into it. It's nothing to really be concerned about. But yeah, I would imagine, you know, my thought process would be if you leave Merrill in center field, yeah, you can make him in left and give him a full season of at bat. Even maybe he's next year is more of like a fourth outfielder type. They can, you know, give him positional flexibility. He hits left-handed. So I think there's a lot of options with him.
Last one for me, KC. Just wanted to, Kevin Charity from Mad Friars joining us this morning. Ethan Salas, can't do an update without talking about Ethan Salas down in what? He's in low A right now?
High A.
He's in high A
right
now.
But he was
a
double A last year.
He was a double A, finished the year there. What are we hearing about him? I've seen a couple highlights, you know, ripping singles, stealing bags and stuff. So, that's pretty cool. But what do you think their plans are with him?
Yeah, I think, first of all, I think sending him to high A was the right move after last year. It's kind of a weird thing because it felt like they were easing him into professional baseball, and then they just kind of, you know, put the foot to the floor and just really rush him up to double A, in my opinion. So I think out of the gate in high A, you know, he's hit safely, I believe, in the first three or four games. Fort Wayne's having some weather issues, so they've only played one game this week. But he played really well in their opening series on the road. He got a couple of big hits, got a big knock in the ninth inning, dumped a single in the left field. But for him, yeah, I think it'll be an interesting challenge for him because the weather in the Midwest League at this time of the year is not, it can be kind of all over the place. So I think having to kind of maybe battle something he hasn't done before is a really good challenge. But out of the gate, he swung the bat really well. And I think just letting him get those everyday at bats at catcher, really play, you know, even at 17, he's still insanely young for the Midwest League. So I think they've done a really good job of kind of letting him get into that role. And I expect that he'll put up really solid offensive numbers there. He's improving his catching behind the plate. So he's looked really solid out of the gate.
And then just quickly, I know they made the switch a couple of years ago where Lake Elsinore is now the low single A. Makes it a little harder to identify the prospects there, and it's the team that's closest to us here, obviously. But is there anything other? I know Dylan Head's there. Is there anything else to be looking for?
He's the guy. If you look at our top 20 list, he's the only person on the top 20 who made the list. We expect DeVries to be up there at some point. We kind of heard rumblings that he might have cracked the opening day roster, but he obviously didn't. Dylan Head's a guy that was in high school last year, and so I think you have to kind of back off the numbers a little bit with him just because he is really, really young. But he plays an incredible defensive center field. I love guys like him that have that just premium athleticism that can just roam the center field. Playing defense in Lake Elsinore is really tough because they have the left center there is huge. So he's been running ball. He ran a ball down last week and looked really good there. Outside of him, you know, you have like, you know, Jay Beshears, they drafted last year out of Duke, second year in a row that they drafted a Duke infielder, obviously Paulie being the one before that. And he's swung the bat really well. And Romeo Sanabria, who's a first baseman, DH type guy, swung the bat really well, kind of a late round pick they had a few years ago. Outside of that, I mean, it's a hodgepodge of some college guys and some undrafted guys, but if you're going to a game up there, those are probably the three guys you'd want to watch.
Kevin, really appreciate the early season update. Padres in the minor leagues from MattFriars.com. Kevin Charity, appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Yeah, interesting stuff there, especially when you think about it. I mean, I know you can't just say Jackson Merrill is now your center fielder of the future forever and ever. They could move him back to the infield at any point. But if you feel comfortable with him out there, it also makes, and I saw this point in the chat, guys like Jacob Marcy, Dylan Head, Homer Bush, if you needed to trade for someone, sure, all of a sudden you now have more depth in the outfield than you thought you had based on how Jackson Merrill has adjusted to the outfield.
I'm definitely down to stop moving guys every year. I think that would be probably a good...
Positionally,
yeah.
All right, more baseball talk on the way with our Friday conversation with our friends from Cespedes Family Barbecue. That'll kick off the second half of Men and Woods next year on 97.3 The Fan.